if you wake up in the morning and the thought is, if I will not conduct, I will not survive, I will die, then you should become a conductor. We have students, talented people, and when they read or see, oh, he or she is non-stop success. Well, I would like to be like that, but it seems like I practice well, I play well, but until now, I don't have this kind of
constant,
luxurious life, and they get demotivated. The concert was on Friday, and I said to myself, Saturday, no music, no work. I woke up. I was forcing myself not to open a score, not to listen to anything. And I gave up at 2 o'clock, 2 p.m. I opened a new score. So you see,
it's an addiction.
It's an addiction, but...
But that's great.
But that's okay.
It's a healthy one. Hello, everyone. Today, I will be talking to one of my closest friends, Emanuel Teknavorian. He is, for those of you who don't know him, an incredible violinist, and as such had a gigantic career, played in the biggest halls with the best musicians of our time, and then a few years ago decided to say, no, I cannot continue like this. I have to become a conductor. And I find that really fascinating, and in general, I find you to be one of the most interesting figures in the classical music scene right now, because to me, it seems like you do what you feel you need to do, not what might be the best thing for the market at the moment. And I see that when, you know, we've known each other for 13 years by now, we have played endless concerts together with you on the violin, but also by now, also a lot with you as a conductor. And yeah, I love the authenticity you show in music. So we will have, I think, quite a bit to talk about today. Thanks for taking the time.
Dominic, it's really special when we see each other. You said already, we go way back, and we try to make our dreams come true. And this is what also connects us. We love music, we love making music, we love communicating through music, and of course the chemistry is great, and we love also being together outside the stage and off the stage, outside the concert halls. So great to talk to you now. Thank you for the introduction, thank you for the warm words. I just have to say right at the beginning, you said I wanted to become a conductor.
Oh yeah.
And this is a very interesting phrase, because I strongly believe, in a way, it is not possible to become a conductor.
Okay.
You can learn the craft.
Yeah.
It's a craft, like an instrument. You learn the craft, you learn the gestures. But you cannot become a conductor. You are a conductor, or you are not a conductor. This is what I strongly believe.
Okay. We will talk about that more.
So I always, you know,
what you mean by that.
Oh, I just heard recently also.
Yeah.
Oh, he wants to, you know, now he wants to become a conductor. No, I my father is a conductor, so I saw him from day, I don't know, when babies can fully see things. But certainly, I think I was 10 days old when my mom took me to a classical concert.
Yeah.
And obviously, when you see your father doing this, you know, shaping music with hands, it's quite natural to imitate that.
Yeah, of course.
So there are many video recordings. I think I showed you even I was conducting Beethoven 9 when I was two years old. Imitating next to him. So I never asked myself, violin, conducting, music. It was natural, it was clear. Obviously, you cannot start to study conducting when you're 7 or 6. That's very unnatural.
Yeah, I mean, communication in the end is such a huge part of that.
Of course. And knowledge and social skills. So I had to start with an instrument. And I felt a strong connection to the instrument violin.
So you really think the path towards conducting was there all the time?
Because all the time.
What from the outside perspective, of course, there's what you feel and what I know from you, and that's what the rest of the world, so to say, notices. And
of course,
as a violinist, you had obviously a gigantic career. Like, you had the best agencies you could possibly have. You were only playing in the top halls of the top people, and like, if you had just continued on that path, it would have been inevitable. You would have just become one of the central violin figures of our time. And the interesting thing to me is also, it's not like you had any issues on the violin. You just told me yesterday that you're playing better than you ever did right now at this point, where nobody can hire you anymore.
I'm in the best. Well, some can, but some not can. Exactly. No, but as a violinist, my first big moment was at the Jean Sibelius International competition. That was in December 2015.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think you remember that before that, in 2014, I sent you a small clip where I was conducting Beethoven's Seventh Symphony.
Yes,
so,
yes.
So for people who met me before Sibelius, the violin competition, the Jean Sibelius violin, they know or knew that conducting was always my big passion. I wanted to conduct all the time.
But
I wasn't, I can tell you, I participated at the Fritz Kreisler competition.
Yeah,
I got
the
third prize. Not much happened after that. I was at the ARD competition in Munich in 2013. I wasn't in the finals. That was a big, big disappointment. In fact, I remember I was just shocked. I was sitting in my hotel room and I wrote a very emotional letter to my father that evening. I still have that. And what I basically wrote was that now that I understand that the people don't accept me as a violinist, I now finally want to devote my time to conducting, and please, Daddy, when I come back from Munich, when I come back home, please, work with me.
Throughout all these years, like when you were really career-wise, it was the main thing was the violin.
Yeah.
Did you all the time think? I mean, now it's one thing to say you also conduct.
Yeah.
But currently, like, you pretty much only, I mean, except for certain specific exceptions, you conduct only.
Yes, yes.
Like, and it's kind of, for me also, what I respect a lot is
you
left behind this kind of security that you had in your career to go for something
completely new. Security, I think security is really the wrong word. One, I never thought of security, and I never felt security as
with
a violinist.
No. Really?
No. What is security?
Well, it's a sense of, okay, if I continue this, there will be a place for me within the scene, definitely. And a place that I would like or feel happy with. I would say that.
Well, also happiness.
Okay,
you see, the when I was playing, for instance, the Beethoven Violin Concerto, I mean, you already mentioned I was very lucky. As a violinist, I got to share the stage with incredible conductors. Still, I wanted to shape the music myself.
Completely.
Completely.
So is that maybe why your first album with the violin was a complete solo album?
Oh no, that was another thing. I mean, this was a chain of also coincidences and so on. The thing before the Sibelius competition, I had no plans of becoming a violin soloist. I just wanted to play on a high level.
Okay.
And I was very much already thinking of doing conducting competitions and master classes and so on. Well, I ended up being in Helsinki. The reason why I was over emotional while I was playing, I mean, it's quite hilarious to see my playing during the competition because I was all over the place. People loved it.
Yes, I loved it. it's great. I mean, especially in competitions, because let's be honest.
Yes, like, because I didn't care at all.
Yes, and that's in the end what we want to hear. Like, you now as well as me, we often follow the current competitions. Is there somebody interesting? And there's nothing worse than somebody who plays perfect, but there's no emotion at all.
Of course, but I was of course exaggerating a bit. But I was exaggerating because I knew whatever happens here, I will have a conducting path.
Back then already?
Yes, of course.
Wow.
So it was quite, well, I was of course overwhelmed. I was delighted. I was excited that one day after the Sibelius competition, I woke up, my email, my inbox was full, concerts coming in, agencies, whatever. Was very exciting, of course.
Yeah.
And then the great thing about playing an instrument, when you practiced well, when you know how to play your instrument, when you know what to do, the violin, or in your case, the double bass, it becomes your voice. And you can express feelings through your instrument, and you can say things that you would never tell to anybody in real life.
With words, yes.
With words.
Yes.
So that's great. I love that, and I still love it. But I remember some months later, of course, this overwhelming feeling carried me through some months.
Yeah, yeah.
But at least already in 2016, already in summer 16, I was like, okay, great, I have all these concerts as a violinist. What about the conducting?
Okay, so it was really there all along.
Yeah, the nature, you know, the nature was screaming.
Mm.
Now I have to say, I mean, I'm blessed. I try when I go to bed, I try to be, you know, in harmony with the world,
yeah,
with myself. And I must say I almost every night now for the last months and the last maybe 2 years, I achieved that. It's a great feeling.
And that's with the violin, when you were basically almost only performing as a violinist, you didn't have that. Okay.
Because the nature, you see, the nature, yeah, the desires, you cannot. So for me, some, you know, now, well, we are young, obviously we're young, but now some 18 or 19 year old people come to me and, oh, I also want to become a conductor. Mm. I play an instrument and I actually want to become a, you know what my phrase is? If you don't wake up, I think I also told, I think we talked about this.
Okay.
If you wake up in the morning and the thought is, if I will not conduct, I will not survive. I will die. Then you should become a conductor.
Otherwise not.
Otherwise, no. The second topic, I mean, we have so much to talk about.
No, we actually have time. We have time.
Look, you know, people think about your career, about my career. Oh, they are so blessed. Of course, we're blessed. Oh, they are so lucky. Of course, we're lucky. But you know, mostly people don't realize how much hard work.
Yes. That is something.
How much hard work we have to put into the stuff we do.
And that's something I definitely want to talk to you about, because it's not only the hard work, it's also being able to resist
all the
things you have to deal with if you do something that is not within the normal parameters of what people tend to do. Like we talked about this often, but I like to mention it at this point also, because I remember when your violin career started to really get rolling, like when you won the Sibelius Prize, and then you started to have more and more bigger concerts, and everyone was like, especially in Vienna, because in Vienna people are very jealous. They were like, ah, Emanuel, it's good, but it's nothing special. And then when the years went by, at some point everyone was like, no, he's a great violinist, it's fantastic, you know. After some time it was just accepted as a common thing. And now I hear the same people say the same things again about you as a conductor. And I'm sure after some years it will again resolve itself.
Yeah.
And
quite sad actually, right?
Yeah. Because, I mean, they think, ah, he stopped the violin. That must mean either it's just lazy to practice. These are the comments.
Oh, I heard
How do you deal with that? What's your way? Just don't care about it? Or does it anger you? Or what is your strategy?
Look, it would be a lie to say that I don't care at all.
Mm.
But I have to say, now I don't care.
Ah.
I cared. I cared.
But by now you already...
people also don't realize, the public doesn't realize. But the thing is that, as you know, the plannings are so much in advance. So we are now planning the season 26, 27, 27, 28. And, how hard I work, how much I study the scores.
Yes, yes.
So when I'm in front of an orchestra, the orchestra feels that how deep the knowledge is. I think this is something that should be normal, but it isn't.
Well, I mean, it's also not so easy to achieve, because kind of you need to transport the feeling that you have a vision that is worth being entrusted upon, in the case of a great orchestra, people that have maybe played the repertoire for decades already.
Yeah, of course.
So, of course, it's not something easy to achieve. Yeah.
So, what I initially wanted to say, the public maybe doesn't realize, but I get invitations from great orchestras. I made debuts with great orchestras, and I had, established a great connection with some fantastic musicians, with great orchestras. So I can tell you now, actually, this is the first time I can tell in front of a camera.
Yeah.
I think that in terms of what you call success, because also the word success is something.
It's very subjective, yeah.
Success, I get invitations from orchestras, and I have to smile when I see those emails, because those orchestras actually never invited me as a violinist.
Ooh.
Can you imagine that?
That's fantastic. You are in a position where you can afford to say, I don't care anymore.
No. And especially I think Vienna is a special city.
Yes.
And the Viennese people, they will be convinced maybe next year or maybe in 2 years. I don't care.
That is nice.
Yeah. And
I mean, it's something, I have to deal with, obviously, too, as a bassist who wants to do mainly solo stuff. It's a lot of people just, bass is a solo instrument. We don't do that. We don't believe that's good. We don't listen to your stuff, and we don't care how you play or what you play, but we don't do it.
Look, as I said, that's quite sad in a way, but
with time it gets...
We don't want to spend time and we don't want to spend thoughts on ignorant people. Why?
Yes.
There is so much beauty out there, so many great people, And, you know, we found each other many years ago, and we spent together, we spent time together and share visions. And so,
and even performances, it must be,
of course. So,
like
so why
20, 30, 40,
many,
over
many,
the years,
many,
yeah.
many performances and the recording. And so why should we think, you know, I don't like negativity.
Mm. Now who does?
Well, some people get intrigued
kind of
by
it. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I don't like negativity. I even don't like, you know, when now another topic, you know, we both teach now.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, we have to say you for this year. You
for this year, I'm at Mozarteum in Salzburg. So I don't even like when my students say, "Oh, this passage is so difficult. I can't play this."
Oh yeah.
It's a small negativity, but it's a negative. No. As an instrumentalist, you have more solutions than problems.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that one I really like, the one with I can't play this. And then, you can only not play it until you can. And then you play it. And then
so
it's, yeah.
Avoid negativity. Avoid people who don't believe in you.
And that's you know, the
don't try to convince them.
Yes,
this is the thing.
A waste of time.
Don't spend your energy to convince people.
Because other people will immediately, like, that's what I notice also now with the bass. But it's what I also, you can see it kind of with different areas or with certain orchestras that we have, for example, both worked with. Like, and that's going to lead to a topic I want to talk to you about too, is
we're flying over the topic.
Orchestras that you have worked with as a violinist.
Yes.
And you're working with now as a conductor. For example, we have recorded a CD together with the Württembergische Kammerorchester Heilbronn.
Yes.
An orchestra we both really love.
Yeah.
A great orchestra in Germany. One of the best chamber orchestras, I have to say. Absolutely.
Yes.
And an orchestra that was very open-minded immediately towards
yes.
what I do as a bassist. As a bassist wants to play solo. And immediately from the first project, I think our recording that we did was the first time they played with you as a conductor. They played with you many, many times as a violinist. How has your experience been like with orchestras? In this case, clearly positive. The fact that they knew you and respected you as a violinist mm-hmm. and as a musician made them even more intrigued from the beginning to what you will have to say as a conductor. Is that normally the case? Sometimes is it maybe the opposite? Like how is your experience there?
Well, I always had a great rapport with, for instance, Veikkaus directors.
Yeah.
And it's very important that an orchestra manager, in this case, Rainer Neumann, is a visionary man.
Yeah.
So he feels your energy and he supports that.
He gets intrigued, but he even
yes.
comes with great ideas himself
yes.
then. Yeah.
Yes. So you need that.
Yeah.
In my case, it was funny because it was obviously everyone only thought of me as a violinist. Not many people supported the idea.
At the beginning.
At the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, really, my parents, close friends, but almost nobody in the musical field. So I wrote to some personalities a letter
mm-hmm.
that now I cannot continue like this. And I studied with my father. I know how to conduct. So let's talk about it. So I took the train to Heilbronn and I was there with Madeleine Landlinger, former intendant.
Yeah.
And I told her my story. I started studying conducting with my father. I already conducted some amateur and youth orchestras. And now I cannot continue like this. I have to conduct. And she looked at me and said, "You know what? I trust you."
Wow. That's fantastic.
So this was, there was Madeleine Landinger. and some other intendants. I cannot, of course, tell all the stories, but at least five personalities gave me some opportunities. And then when I met Rainer Neumann, the relationship with the orchestra became even deeper.
Yeah.
And so you need personalities who are believers. That's unfortunately a rarity, as you know.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But we still hope, and we don't give up. I think at the end of the game, we will win the battles.
Yeah, I think, you know, in the long run, if enough people give you the chance and you get enough opportunities to show what you can do, and also to show the authenticity with which you do what you do, then in the long run, at some point, it's the same with the violin back in the day. Like, if you play one great concert even in a city like Vienna, okay, people are going to be like, yeah, that was good. Yeah. Some people are going to start saying, yeah, he's fantastic. Some maybe not. Then you play another one and another one. And then you play 10, 20 concerts in the big halls in Vienna. And then nobody could say anymore, ah, no. I mean, they still can. But of course, at some point, you kind of roll over like a wave.
Yeah.
And it just becomes something normal.
Yeah. No, I mean, in my path, it's already happening. So yeah. they cannot. So who will stop us? Who can stop us?
Health. Then who can? Yeah, health, obviously.
War. What's happening now?
Yeah.
If this happens in Europe,
then it will not be relevant.
Health.
Yeah.
Or war, or, you know, but the intendant who don't like you. I mean, come on.
Fortunately, there are many intendanten, and that's the good thing.
Look, recently, this was so funny because I heard somebody, the phrase, Dominic is a really good double bass player. You know what my response was? I said, no, sorry, Dominic is the best double bass player in the world.
Oh, ooh. Up for debate, but I appreciate the sentiment.
Look, this is my opinion. This is my opinion that you are the best double bass player in the world. So this is my opinion. I believe that. So then this gentleman said, ha ha ha, yeah, of course.
I know which one you're talking about, though. Yeah.
He's your friend, so you can talk like that about him. Yeah, you should talk like that about him. I said, no, he is the best. Full stop. So I believe in that. I will invite you as a soloist. I support you.
Thank you.
So, and many do. So the ones who still think that double bass is not a solo instrument, okay.
You know, I think in the end, it's also a matter of time. I talked about this specific aspect also with Tabia Zimmermann once. And, you know, I mean, she played as a violist even with like Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra, yeah. Right? Like, you cannot do much more, but even she sometimes gets some people.
Back then as a female. Even as a female, and that was also not something
that was, yeah, I mean,
normal,
especially with Brad and Phil,
especially as a female viola player.
Yeah, but I mean, I just listened to.
I mean, we know all the story with Sabine Meyer, you know, being a female clarinet player, and so they made it.
I mean, in this case, she also had Karajan to support her, and then even then left the orchestra, which is insane. It shows you again, like. Probably you need people that believe in you, that get things started, no matter what it is you do. And I think that's not only in classical music the case, probably it's the case in whatever field you go to in the end. And that's going back to what you said earlier, like from the outside, it looks like things are just happening. And it from the outside, it might seem like that, but you know, I've witnessed the whole.
We spent huge amount of, you know, huge sums of money to promote ourselves, and you know, we have
and have had many conversations. We were just so angry about certain people. But it's nice to see that bit by bit things are developing in a good way.
Yes,
but with you, it's what you said also earlier was people from the outside often don't see how good things are developing with the conducting world,
yeah.
Which is also partially because you don't have any social media where people could see what you're like, could easily have a view of what you do. Why? Why do you not do any of that? I would be interested to see what you would
do. I have a clear answer on that. I just don't like... Okay, I'm trying to be a bit diplomatic now.
You don't need to be too diplomatic.
I know, but if we would sit here without cameras...
I know what you would probably say.
Yes, but okay. I don't like when people lie.
And that's what you see a lot.
And I don't like when people pretend.
Yeah.
So again, back to what I said, I want to go to bed. I want to wake up in harmony.
Yeah.
I remember, I had, as you know, I had social media for
a year
or something. And I remember just being there only for a minute caused stress.
Yeah.
And then at some point I said, I don't want that and I don't need that.
But don't you think sometimes, you know, there it's not a matter of if you do it, but of how. And of if you, like, put out stuff or if you consume stuff. For example, I rarely consume stuff.
But you cannot, you cannot avoid it anyway.
Oh, you can.
Well, you can, but then it's very human to be curious.
Yes, yes. And then to still start with the scrolling and
then
it's over.
Of course, it's normal. We are curious people. Also the same thing when artists say, oh, we don't care about reviews. Oh, we never open the newspaper. We never read stuff about...
Although I actually stopped doing that.
Well, I'm sure that if you play a big concert...
I will probably look, yeah.
You will look.
Damn.
Still, the biggest... I met the biggest conductors, the most famous conductors.
Yeah.
They read. Oh, they do. They do. Maybe in some... in some interviews, you know, they say, oh, I don't care. But when you talk to them, they do care. Which is normal.
It's human in the end, yeah.
You know, we work hard, we practice, we develop ideas. We don't develop ideas for our walls.
Yeah.
We develop ideas for the world, for audiences. So it's just natural to be curious what other people thought of it.
But being curious, I am curious. I mean, okay, I know you, so I get to know what you do more than other people. But don't you think a lot of people would be very curious to see all the things that you have been doing over the last years and that you're doing
they
now?
They can see.
It's much easier accessible. For example, let's
if but I don't like when platform. Things are easy accessible. Easily accessible.
I think my personal opinion with social media, for example, is I used to think exactly like that. I used to think, especially it was in my eyes more.
I remember when your journey started.
Yes, yes. You like it was in 2019, I think, changed. But at the beginning, before, I was like, it's more like a narcissistic self gratification thing. For a lot of people, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
But then I remembered why I, for example, became a bassist in the first place. It's not because I heard the best bassists in the world play in Vienna in the Musikverein or Konzerthaus, because back then you heard that once a decade maybe that a good bass player would play solo. It's because of social media back then, YouTube as the major platform, if you call it social media.
Yeah, but YouTube is something I cannot compare YouTube.
I thought that too, but then, you know, I watched the great bassists play there and it was like, wow, this is incredible. I want to do that, right? And that's what gave me the initial push. And then I met some bassists who, from, you know, when videos were uploaded, when I did competitions or stuff, who saw that and were like, you know, this is why I am practicing every day. And then I thought, maybe there is a bit more than just this. And I see it also if I consume social media, I don't like scroll. I visit specific people and their pages who I find interesting. Maybe a cellist that I really like. And then I see, oh, he or she played that. And maybe they post a video and I'm like, oh, this fingering, this phrasing, wow, yeah. Fantastic. And I would, for example, be very curious to see all the things that you do, like which orchestra you perform with.
What you can maybe... text me every day. I can send you multiple videos from my hotel rooms, how I study the scores, if you want. We have students, talented people. And when they read or see, oh, he or she is nonstop success. Why? Well, I would like to be like that, but it seems like I practice well, I play well, but until now, I don't have this kind of
constant,
luxurious life, and they get demotivated.
Yeah, that point I really get, because that's the feeling. If you look at some people online, it seems like they only have great concerts, only have successful concerts all the
time. They always get Ferraris at the airport and, you know, drive to the venue and stay in the best hotels and eat the best food and so. Dominic, I have to tell you also something. The social media thing is... I talked about this to highly professional PR managers. Mm-hmm. There's a big difference if you're an instrumentalist, if you're a soloist, or you're a conductor.
That's probably the last topic I want to talk to you about. It's the differences between what you do as a soloist and what you do as a conductor. It's on the one hand, what you need to do for the whole career aspect. And on the other hand, also like repertoire learning wise, like that would be fascinating to me, because obviously on an instrument, you have to like physically learn all the things. Okay, you need to as a conductor also, but let's be real, that is the tools you need to learn to conduct a piece. That's not the hardest part of it.
I know, you know, this is something that Michael Sanderling told me. Michael Sanderling was a great cellist. And listened to his Dvorak concerto. Intonation, spot on. Technique, spot on. I mean, he really knew how to play the cello. And I first played with him with the Tonhalle Zürich in 2018. And backstage, you know, these moments where seconds before you go out. And I looked at him and said, Michael, you know, in 1 month, I'm giving my big, actually, debut as a conductor. So I was talking to him. So I'm following your path because you were also an instrumentalist. Mm. Well, he doesn't play, unfortunately. But he still teaches.
Uh-huh.
And Michael Sanderling always said to me that teaching is so wonderful and important, and now I get him. In fact, I want to call him and to talk to him about that. Anyway, so he said, you know, no comparison in if a conductor says being on stage is difficult, they lie, because we know as an instrumentalist, as instrumentalists, how difficult it is. You know, the shifts, the bow, and with pianists, the pedaling and whatever.
The motorical part.
Yes, the motorical part is difficult. But I, of course, agree. I know how difficult it is to play a Brahms concerto. But to conduct a great Brahms symphony, believe me, it's more difficult than to play a Brahms concerto.
But how do you prepare for that? Like on an instrument, you can practice it. And then at some point, you know, okay, I can play it on my instrument. Like I have the technique down. I have the idea of a musical phrase. I can actually make it sound myself. You are at that point. If you learn a Brahms symphony, it's not like you have already played it, so to say. Yeah. You play it the first time when you work with the orchestra.
Yeah.
So how can you prepare for that? Like what are the...
The preparation is... What people see in the concert... It's a tiny little part of the whole system. The most of the time you sit alone in front of your desk and you analyze the score. Because you try to feel and to understand. First of all, you have to analyze what is written down. What does it mean when Brahms writes poco forte. What is that? Why? Yesterday I was talking about this with a friend and student. Brahms wrote the Haydn variations for an orchestra,
mm-hmm.
and then he made the piano version for two pianos. And then in the finale, in the piano version, he writes animato, accelerando.
And in the orchestra he doesn't?
Orchestra not. Why?
You tell me.
I don't know, because we cannot ask him. But you sit there and you have to make choices. So you think, well, will I consider that accelerando or not?
When you played with the orchestra.
When I'm standing in front of the orchestra. Being a conductor, nowadays people think, oh, it's just waving with the stick or having a great, great social life and being very glamorous and having so much power and yeah, and I can control whatever. I think being a conductor is a spiritual task. When we hear that a great personality like Thomas Mann, who wrote so many books, he was honored that he was friends with Bruno Walter because they thought Bruno Walter was a highly spiritual man, intellectual, new art, visual art, music, literature. So he was, you know, Bruno Walter, the conductor. So that changed a bit. So when Bruno Walter, I'm sure, when he conducted the Egmont Overture.
Yeah.
I am sure that he made not only analyzed the score, not only was dealing with Ludwig van Beethoven, but also tried to have deep knowledge and to be close with the work of Goethe.
Who then, in turn, inspired Beethoven.
Who inspired Beethoven. And then you go back and you okay, who made paintings of Egmont, and why did they paint Egmont in that? And what is now? Let's go back to social media. People think how to become popular on social media. Mm. It takes time.
Yes.
So they don't have time. I'm sure, I have to say, I'm sad to say this, but I'm sure that many young conductors who conduct Egmont Overture don't know anything about Egmont. Let's say you play the I Puritani.
Yeah.
With the Bottesini I Puritani cello.
Yes.
How many cellists or double basses who play I Puritani listen to the opera I Puritani and know I Puritani? Tell me.
Of course. I mean, that is a good point, and especially listen to Pavarotti sing it. That's a different amount of inspiration there.
But to know what the opera, yeah. What is the text, what you are playing?
What is the context? What is the message? So for you,
it's a lot about doing the
research, trying to really understand what could this mean. So that is the one aspect. The other thing which I find interesting is you need to then, it's one thing knowing all those things, having a great idea, but then you need to somehow, well, this is one measure of doing it, but also through words, through your expression, you need to then somehow make the orchestra understand and feel and do it with you. So how do you prepare for that? Like, are there certain tricks, certain ways you think of what you might say or how you might say it or how you might express it visually? Like, what are the ways
to prepare for that? Of course, that's the technique. But by asking me this, I can again say this is the part where this becoming conductor is wrong. Because either you can or you can't.
So you think that that's just something that needs to
people
come naturally.
People attend master classes, conducting master classes. If conducting would be something that is that you can teach, and you say, okay, when a rehearsal starts, you go out, you smile, but when you smile, don't show your teeth, and maybe put your head like this and say, good morning, and this will work.
Yeah, okay.
You cannot teach.
Yes, yes.
Oh, I read that recently also the great conductors, well, let's not mention names, but a great conductor came to an orchestra, didn't say even hello, didn't say even a word, just started. It was a great success. Imagine going to a conducting masterclass and you tell your teacher, what about I go out and don't greet the orchestra? Your teacher would say, no, you have to first shake the hand of the concertmaster and maybe also the co-principal, and they say, good morning. I'm very much looking forward to making music with you. What a great honor.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
please, that, yeah. Would you mind maybe starting with the first movement of this symphony? Yes? Oh, you're ready? Okay, let's...
So that part, you think, is just something that has to come...
Individuality.
And it has to come natural to you.
It has to come, and it develops.
That's something I see also in teaching. Kind of, it is a similar, it's a different thing, but in one way similar, because you're not the one who's making the actual sound when you teach. You need to, through what you say and how you say it, somehow get another musician to make something happen. And it's also something I see there, how you do that, what works, and in the end, how what works for which person. I mean, it's probably the same with an orchestra. You feel, okay, maybe in these kind of countries, you have to be like this, in this country like that,
or it's completely
individual.
Dominic, a relationship between a conductor and an orchestra is like a human relationship. We know when, you know, in a date situation with a beautiful woman, she might be beautiful, she might be intelligent, clever, great humor, great smile, everything great, but there is no connection.
Yeah.
So this is the same with
orchestras.
With orchestras.
And what do you do if you feel like
you have to be professional?
Yeah.
You have to be polite, the same as in a date situation.
Because you have to be professional.
No, but you have to be polite. Yeah. You know, you see, there is, I don't know how you felt it, but always when I had a date, you could tell after some minutes if you want to see that person again or not.
Yeah, it's the same with teaching. Even after a few minutes, you see what can happen.
With the orchestra. So after a few minutes, you feel, oh, this is going to be, I can't wait to see them tomorrow.
Yeah.
Or you have to be professional, which in music, because I don't like to compromise in music.
Yeah.
Is difficult, but still you have to be polite. And I had that, oh my God, I had that with few orchestras where the first rehearsal finished and I was, when will the next rehearsal start?
Does it sometimes happen that the first rehearsal is so not so great and then you feel with time it develops and then it becomes great still?
You know, sometimes the first rehearsal is very good and then the second is horrible and the concert is then worse. This doesn't happen often, but sometimes. But usually.
But that part must be quite challenging. Like if you have your violin and your bow, it's your violin and your bow that you play on. But with the orchestra, so to say, every time you need to...
Yeah, but our instruments drive us crazy as well.
If
the string doesn't function, if the bow hair is not sticky enough. And so... Look, the conclusion is... Whatever you do, if you want to be at your best, if you want to leave a legacy,
yeah,
because this is something you want to do.
I don't think so necessarily. I thought so maybe in the past, but at this point I'm like, you know, once like, no, you leave a legacy.
No, but you want to establish your instrument as a solo instrument.
Yes, but on the other hand, I just
don't lie.
Well, in a way, but more as a means to an end. My thing is, in the end, I want to do stuff that's fun and great for me.
Yeah.
Like, leave a legacy. It's more like,
and still leave a legacy.
Once I'm dead, it has to be. And I have to say, at this point, I'm like, I don't care what happens when I'm dead. I want to have a life that is fun and that is great and that fulfills me.
But it would be a pity if you don't leave a legacy.
Yeah, but does it matter? Like, I love, there's this one interview with Heinrich Schiff that I absolutely love. Like, he gets asked, you know, in the village where you live.
Yeah, I know.
There is this Friedrich Gulda Street.
I know.
Would you be happy if there's a Heinrich Schiff Street? And he's, I don't give a damn. Once I'm dead, I'm dead. It doesn't matter. And I have to say, I agree with him at this point.
But he left a legacy.
Oh, he absolutely. But I don't know if there's a street named after him. I mean,
maybe. Not yet.
So I don't know. For me, that part doesn't matter too much. Because anyways, once I'm gone, I'm gone. But to me, it's more like, it's a means to an end. I want to change the scene so that I can do the thing that I love to do.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of, like, you're breaking through an image that, okay, violinist is a violinist, conductor is a conductor.
Yes. I mean,
in the past, everyone was many things. Like, Bernstein was a pianist, a composer, and a conductor. Composer.
But still, they all had difficulties. Gustav Mahler, during his lifetime, he was quite a successful composer.
Yeah.
People like Richard Strauss admired his first symphony or fourth symphony, but he was mainly known as a conductor.
And Strauss?
Strauss was more successful as a composer.
But he was conducting.
Yes, he was conducting. But obviously, when Gustav Mahler was the chief of the Vienna State Opera, I think Strauss had a position in Munich, so he was conducting.
Mm-hmm.
But his fame, and everyone knew he's a great conductor, but it was Richard Strauss, der Komponist.
Mm.
Der Komponist, der die Salome geschrieben hat, der die Elektra geschrieben hat.
Yeah.
With Gustav Mahler, it was the opera conductor.
Who also
in the summer breaks writes symphonies. So it's life is.
But does it matter in the end? Like, if Gustav Mahler was considered maybe.
But he was frustrated that people thought that he's only a conductor.
But he got his symphonies premiered with the best orchestras there were.
Because he conducted them. Not only, but he was the one who was promoting his music.
Yeah.
And later Klemperer and Bruno Walter came. But during a lifetime, also Bernstein, he saw himself as a conductor. But people, if you ask now, Bernstein is more famous as a conductor, I think.
Now, yes. But when he was alive, you think conductor, pianist or composer?
No, when he was alive, I think also he was famous as a conductor.
And also probably as a communicator, I think.
Of course, that was
his biggest thing.
It is a challenge. If you have more talents, then it's difficult.
It's the same with Bottesini, like in the double bass world. Bottesini was known as the bass virtuoso, but he wanted to be known as the composer.
Yeah.
And recognized as one. And he was kind of, but he was always the bassist. So, I mean, and that's something probably, is that why you completely stopped with violin? Or like, I mean, not completely, but like almost completely.
Wait some years? In some years we sit here and then.
Is this?
Oh, I came back to the violin.
Okay.
Or to the viola.
is this a promise? You think you're gonna go back at some point?
I never stopped.
Like, I mean, when it comes to the concert scene, like to the bigger concert
maybe
scene. Yeah,
maybe a bit more.
Okay, I think that's a good point.
I miss my instrument.
Yeah,
I miss playing the violin when I am on tour as a conductor.
Yeah.
and cannot touch the violin.
You don't bring it with you?
No.
It's so heavy to carry, right?
It's very heavy to carry. Almost, yeah. Well, nothing compared to your traveling life. But that's another topic.
That's another, but we don't travel with
I don't, anymore. But I don't miss the life of a solo violinist.
Mm.
That I don't miss. Although life of a conductor is so challenging, but I don't miss. But my ideal, something I don't like is the word or this whole discussions of work-life balance. I don't like that. But I have many interests. I want to be more knowledgeable in literature, more knowledgeable in visual arts. And for that, I need to spend time.
Yeah.
And I hope to do so. I hope to.
But that then again also can inspire you also in music.
Yes, but tremendously. But now I can't, obviously.
Yeah.
I can read. I can go to museums, but now the focus is every week to conduct a new program, and mostly debuts. But the time will come, and even to spend time with friends, with you.
Sometimes it comes a bit too short because you have, yeah, I know that feeling. But
so we were happy to be in a cinema recently.
Yes, watching.
We won't say that.
Incredible movie, definitely. But yeah. to end this, the work-life balance thing, I just talked a few days ago to Christoph Wimmer, the principal bass of the Vienna Philharmonic, who's also professor at the university. And I asked him that, like, how does that work for you, work-life balance? And he's like, yeah, you know, in the end, it's about the mindset. It's not work for me.
Exactly.
It's kind of life balance in the end. Of course, there is always work. Like,
no, it's only work balance.
No, but I mean, of course, there's work, like emails and stuff you have to do. But in the end...
Oh, you still write emails?
ChatGPT at this point. No, but in the end, if what you do, the music you make in the end, I mean, that... You can,
that counts.
We cannot really consider work. I mean, work is a part of learning it, a part of getting there, but that's the best part, one of the best parts of life. We just did last week premiere and Mahler Lied von der Erde together, and that was a fantastic experience, I have to say. I think what we got out of that
was very special.
Was quite
and
impressive.
Even after that, I thought the concert was on Friday, and I said to myself, Saturday, no music, no work. I woke up. I was forcing myself not to open a score, not to listen to anything. And I gave up at 2 o'clock, 2 p.m. I opened a new score. So you see.
It's an addiction.
It's an addiction, but...
But that's great.
But that's okay.
It's a healthy one. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Great pleasure. And even let's finish by telling our friends who watch this that we had concerns because we know each other for many years.
Yeah.
And we never talk in English.
Yes.
But this was quite fun.